God's not dead, he's merely hiding. You can see him in the morning when the sun is rising. Greed's not good and God's not dead. I don't care what Nietzsche or Ayn Rand said. The blood of every man is red, and I'm not going to war. They justify all the things they do with convoluted logic, and waves still pound upon the sand and will when they're gone. God's not dead, he's merely hiding. You can see him in the morning.
It is time for a weekly visit from our favorite social, political, and metaphysical commentator, Less Visible. He writes several blogs right around the globe that expresses reality as it is seen from beyond that smoky mirror of spin and deception, with a style and candor that cuts deep, separating, as it were, the bone from the marrow. And here at Feet to Fire, we experience the audio edition with the powerful poetic delivery of his written message, with a style that you will love or hate, depending upon your desire to be alive and awakened to the light of truth, remain asleep in the darkness of delusion. Let's take a trip across the pond to somewhere in Europe, and this week's comments from Less Visible.
Aru! This is your dog poet, Visible, still grounded in the saucer pod, courtesy of malicious corporate greed from telecom. To paraphrase a jingle from the home office, reach out and screw someone. It's okay. I'm getting a lot done, and maybe that means something later on. I've noticed that my readership has nosedived during this period, which puts a personal touch on that old out of sight, out of mind. My terrestrial father used to say about me, no news is good news. Well, that's true in many respects in relation to all of us and is the source of that ancient Chinese curse, may you live in interesting times. We certainly do live in interesting times at the moment. Love is stronger than I usually can't remember what I talked about the last time I was here, so there's always the possibility that I'll say the same things. Well, it's always the same thing from another perspective along the way. There's only ever one thing of importance to be considered, and that is one's relationship with the ineffable. Everything in one's life depends on it, and the relative degree of joy or sorrow can be attributed to the state of it as well. It's funny how the mind works. I find myself watching my mind most of the time to see what it wants to come up with. The mind is really good with excuses and rationalizations. It's good with procrastination as well. It's like our mind has a mind of its own. The way I see it is that there is only one mind, and the particular point at which we access it is the mind of its own portion. Our idea of a separate mind is the source of our suffering and the basis of our mortality. We think we're saving and preserving our lives by a focused self-interest, but we're actually sacrificing our lives as a result of it. A child, before it begins to walk, sees things upside down, much the way old cameras used to do. This is the main hurdle that needs to be overcome in the process of learning to walk. You could say that most of us still see the world upside down when it comes to what is real and what is not. It's possible to know what is real up to a certain point, but it's near impossible to communicate it. Some people have a degree of this, but most people don't. Spiritual masters have it, and that is what their followers hope to get from them, but most of them just sit there focused on the teacher and never tumble to the fact that the teacher is inside as much as he is outside, and that is at the point where you want to connect. Our spiritual teacher is walking around inside of us all of the time. The imaginary distance that seems to exist between us and our spiritual teacher is based on the degree of our focus on the outer world. Most of us, and especially those listening to this broadcast or pursuing other venues engaged in the same thing, would like a greater degree of contact with our spiritual self and the indwelling consciousness. The means by which we can achieve this are quite simple, but we very often don't do them, or we do them sporadically, and so we get inconsistent results consonant with the amount of effort taken. Some of the mediums for a closer communication with our divine nature are contemplation, meditation, practicing the presence, prayer, chanting, doing good works, and other forms of discipline that are geared toward attracting the presence of the divine ineffable. We're too much like children in respect of this. Imagine a child pulling at his mother's skirt, crying for some object, or even to be taken into her arms. Sooner or later, usually sooner, The child is crying for some other object or to be put back down on the ground so it can run off into the playground and become lost in the activity taking place there. The divine is a lot like that mother. When you go crying to the divine, it is very likely to place something in your path to distract you. This has something to do with testing the sincerity of your interest. As long as you can be distracted from the pursuit of union, it is apparent that you are not fully committed. Most of us want to keep up appearances, too. You go to church on Sunday, and it all looks controlled and respectable. Your peers might feel threatened by radical behavior on your part. Let's face it. If your lips are constantly moving in prayer and your associates notice this, they're going to think you're odd. It is generally necessary to go mad in order to come into the divine presence. Some of us have families that depend on us for support and maintenance. This can seem a stumbling block to some who feel that such responsibilities interfere with the pursuit of the divine. The great Indian sage Lahiri Mahasaya showed that it's quite possible to be a householder and enlightened at the same time. I bring this up because many people feel that their duties and responsibilities make a constant and ongoing pursuit of the divine impossible. That's not the case at all. There's only one doer in the world or anywhere else. If we operate as if that doer were operating through us, then we are increasingly in the presence of that doer. The primary job of every seeker is to stand guard at the gates of their mind. Controlling what enters into your mind and what thoughts you focus on has much to do with how speedily you come into the presence. Many people think that their thoughts are their own. Such is not the case. Our mind is an airport. Thoughts arrive and depart all day long. Some of them are the normal traffic of many separated minds, ping-ponging their desires and anxieties into cyberspace. If you could see the thoughts moving in and out of your personal mental space, it would possibly look like the way it looks, or the way the ocean looks to a scuba diver with varied varieties of fish swimming in all directions. There are other broadcast centers for thought as well. Some of them are ancient, for good and for ill. Some of them are concerted broadcasts from vested interests that seek to herd the bulk of humanity in particular directions. Disciplining the mind is job one. You can't do much of anything else until that has been accomplished. Once we gain control over the comings and goings of thoughts in our minds and the identification with thoughts, as if they were our own, we become able to hear the still voice within that is usually overpowered by the clamor of all these thoughts flying around. Once you add in the television, radio, iPods, and various vibrationary traffic, you find you're cut off from the deeper parts of yourself, and your life is lived on the surface among the temporary and perishable things of your time. In most cases, you won't have actually lived at all. You'll have merely moved from room to room in a house of dreams until the dream is over. It has never been so busy and confusing as it is now, and that is because it's all being summed up now. The attractions and interferences are so intense because their purpose is to distract you from the voice and the presence of the divine. It is both amusing and frightening to watch the infrastructure crumble while the massive population continues on indifferently to it, as if it weren't happening, as if all the lessons of history had never been learned, and as if every indicator and warning had no meaning or impact at all. This time we find ourselves in, it's all about awakening, and one can cooperate in the unveiling of the hidden truth, or one can be progressively led into nightmare until one has no choice but to awaken. We will awaken. It's just a matter of how much trauma is required to accomplish it. Wiser minds are struggling for awareness and awakening. For such as these, help is very much at hand. Suffering is present for those who insist upon it. For those who insist on the perpetuation of what is being transformed, who insist that things should remain as they are, there is only suffering at their loss of what cannot be continued as it is. We have come as far as we can, going in the wrong direction. Once imbalance reaches critical mass, the scales automatically begin to adjust, and that can be seen in political and cultural affairs at every level. It can also be seen in the hand of nature, for those whose eyes are open to the increasing speed of incremental change. Those who have hoarded the wealth of the world to themselves face a serious dilemma. It is going to melt away into nothing. The power that has moved through their affairs and which has maintained their positions is going to be switched off. The power is going to reroute through other avenues of expression. One can rail against this as they wish, but it will fall on deaf ears. Change or be changed. Change or be changed. Adjust to the higher arc or be adjusted. Whenever corruption is rampant in high places, it seeps downward. This is another kind of trickle-down effect. When good government prevails, the people are inspired and industrious. When they fear their leadership, they also fear one another. The final stage is when they see their leaders as a joke. Mockery and scorn follow. As it stands today, those who are honest are made into criminals. When money can be printed out of thin air for the profit of those owning the presses, then a massive ghost wealth hollows out and destroys the foundation of a nation's wealth. Chaos and revolution follow. It is not an accident that entertainment has become pervasively banal and pornographic. Hypocrisy becomes an accepted medium of expression, and Sarah Palin's tits become the attending graphic to empty statements about honor and integrity. The music turns into jackhammering brain rape. The culture is turned into a chemical waste dump, while preening intellectuals explain everything in terms no one can understand. Zombie armies make war under false pretenses for the purpose of stealing resources and for geopolitical advantage. Corporations determine the operation of government for the sole reason of greater profit, which bankrupts the middle class and sends the lower classes into the street to live in tents and cardboard boxes. As the bridges and highways crumble, the money to fix them is given to the banks and the military for hoarding and gratuitous wars. Airports and the rest of the transportation industry have turned into ridiculous search and seizure exercises to prohibit terrorism, which is being performed by the government entrusted with protecting you from it. It doesn't sound good, does it? It's there to be seen, but it's not seen except by a few. Most people know that something is wrong, but they don't know what it is because the real answer to that is unacceptable. The common mind cannot accept what is happening because that means waking up to it, and sleep is preferred to the uncomfortable alternative. We've been through variations of this many times before. Over the course of many thousands and thousands of years, the same conditions have come and gone over and over. At times, it has been the cause of wiping away every trace of the civilization in which it took place. There's something in human nature that always gravitates toward destruction. The few set out to fleece and enslave the public, and the public abdicates its watchfulness and embraces fear and rumor instead of the necessary vigilance that might protect them from the predators. We're sitting on a time bomb of negative possibilities, and it's all in our minds. It came out of our minds, and it turned into the environment we're living in. The cause and the cure are in the mind, and wiser minds are rejecting everything but the presence of the divine, which has everything in hand. Everything is under control. And you are either resident in that understanding, or you are thrown upon your own insufficient resources to work it out. I suppose that is what I'm getting to. You have to trust in something greater than yourself. Everything has been brought to its present pass as an object lesson. It is from what is learned by the lessons that we are granted a new awareness of how things should be and will be. For all the fearful aspects and looming shadows of an uncertain future, we are being led and guided into something new and wonderful if we will allow it. There can be no new age until the stranglehold of the unreal is broken. This necessarily means the passing away of outworn forms and mindsets which have blinded us to our real potential and which have blinded us to the beauty of ourselves and one another. It's all going to pass away. The new age will have its own challenges, but they will not be the same ones we've faced before. The hand of truth and justice is going to drive a wooden stake through the festering heart of the vampire banks and consortiums like Goldman Sachs. Monsanto's grip on the lip of the cosmic toilet is going to loosen, and they will swirl around the bowl with all the rest of the lampreys toward their new home in the netherworlds below. Justice and judgment are coming, and they will not be denied. The demons in human form, who have plagued us for so long, are being pushed to the center stage to be seen and identified. In their minds, it all has a different meaning, all the way up to the moment when they have their eyes open to their fate. Anyone can change at any time, for so long as time remains. Some will, but most will not. This is the way of it. So many monkeys with their hands gripping the mango in the vase. They could let go, but they won't. They've made their profits from the weaknesses in human nature, but fell victim to their own in the end. You've got a front row seat, people. It might not hurt to make some preparations in advance, and it certainly won't hurt to take command of your minds ahead of time. The state of your mind and the point of your focus have a great deal to do with what happens to you. You might think of the divine as an invisible hand that you can hold on to. The more you surely believe that you are holding on to that hand, the more that hand is very definitely holding on to you. If you don't see a hand, then what are you holding on to? Well, it is for each person to sort that out for themselves. That's what life is all about. Well, we've come round again to the end of one more sock-warming escapade at Feet to the Fire Radio. It is our hope that your faith increases in proportion to your needs. Faith is most certainly the substance of things unseen. And our faith automatically shapes this substance according to the template we envision, according to whatever it is we have placed our faith in. The ultimate source of salvation and well-being is resident within us. We have only to contact it, and that is a matter of personal choice. I'll see you next week if there is one, and I wish you the greatest degree of security and harmony in the imperishable invisible which animates you and whose great love vibrates everywhere within us and around us and as only to be recognized as such. Until the next time, aloha and aru.
Morning when the sun is rising, God's not dead, merely hiding. You can see him in the morning when the sun is rising.